Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 144 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It's a Sunday night, and both myself and my guest, the great Scott Coleman, are not enjoying sports today. Not really baseball, but at the top here, Scott, let's just talk about for like 45 seconds on our terrible NFL teams, because I know a lot of our listeners like the Falcons, and it's been a disaster for them. And your team laid a rather historic egg today, I thought. So that was kind of brutal for both of us.
Yeah, I'm a Colts fan. Not getting shut out. It was kind of a crazy number. Andrew Luck, since his college days, had never been shut out in a game, which is like 140 games or something like that at this point, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, not great when you don't score against the Jaguars.
Yeah, no, it was not a good performance. And by the way, I know we have a lot of fans of the Carolina Panthers listening to the podcast. They were all full today as well. So it was like an equal opportunity. I think those are probably, not the Colts, but I think the Falcons and the Panthers are the two biggest fan bases listening to the podcast, at least in my anecdotal experience. And it was pretty rough for everybody involved today. So I want to at least start there and just talk about how the fact that the Braves are pretty fun at the moment, but the NFL is not. At least not for me and you, Scott. So, anyway, that kind of tells you. I want to start with that just on purpose. But it kind of tells you that there isn't too much to talk about. We came back. If you missed it somehow, we did an emergency podcast on Monday evening to talk about Josh Donaldson and Brian McCann. So, but we have a lot of stuff on those two things there. So, I mean, other than that, there hasn't been a ton of like headline worthy news. I guess the biggest thing that happened this week is not really baseball related, and it was about the broadcast, because Joe Simpson is now moving off of being the lead TV analyst and is now going to do more radio, and it's Jeff Francoeur, former Braves player, and I guess I should say this every time we talk about Jeff, he's 2 years older than me, but we went to the same high school, and we're not friends, but I've known him for probably 24 years, so just a little context there. Jeff was not the greatest baseball player in the world after he was supposed to be, but I do know him a little bit, so just let me say that out loud right now. Anyway, Francoeur's the lead guy, TV, doing like 100-ish games, I guess, according to the AJC, and we're going to get more Tom Glavine, which is interesting, because Glavine's always been sort of a fan favorite in terms of his work in the booth, but the headliner is Simpson not being the lead guy anymore. So what was your reaction to this? I know you're farther away than I am in terms of just proximity, but everybody kind of had a reaction to this. So what was yours?
I was glad to see it happen. You never root for somebody to lose their job or get demoted in Joe Simpson's case, but I think it was pretty clearly a time to make a change. I mean, you think back just on the last year, anytime a TV announcer has to make not one, but basically two apologies for comments made on air. Of course, there was his little rant about the Dodgers players not wearing what he deemed to be professional attire for batting practice when they were shirts that raised money for cancer awareness. Whenever you go on a 5-minute rant about that, and then of course he went down, I think that night actually, and apologized to the Dodgers. And then he had the what I thought was really unprofessional comments questioning Juan Soto's age because he was a Latin-born player. I think that was by far the worst of it. And if memory serves, I want to say that the Nationals GM and him kind of got into it a little bit, and the Nets folks were really, with good reason, really offended and not happy with it. So anytime you're at that point, I know the Braves came out and said that didn't directly have an impact on the decision. I don't know if I necessarily believe it, but like you said, I don't know Francoeur personally, but he seems to have a general enthusiasm for the game. Was an entertaining player to watch when he was in Atlanta, and I think hopefully they're able to as he continues to get some polish in the booth. Really kind of embraces being a Braves fan favorite, if you will, whenever he came up, and tells some great stories. I'm sure he has enough stories that could fill up an entire season's worth of games, and that'll be a lot of fun to hear. So I was certainly in favor of it. I'm glad to see it. Glad to see the change happen, and look forward to games, obviously, in April.
For sure. And I do think, and I think I should say out loud, that I don't think Jeff at the moment is a particularly good analyst. So I think there's some projection here from Fox in what they're doing. I think they're seeing someone who's young. You know, Joe's been around for a long, long time. I think people forget how long Joe's been around. Honestly, it's been a long time. But in Francoeur, he's less polished, as you mentioned, but does have more enthusiasm. I think part of the annoyance that people had, including me recently, is that Simpson doesn't seem to enjoy the modern game very much in some ways. And that was, by the way, that's not only Simpson. I think that was a big criticism that took place in the playoffs, even with John Smoltz, who people really liked when he first started. And now people were really kind of critical of he and Joe Buck talking about sort of not liking the modern game and all that stuff from the playoffs. So just having that youthful voice, having that energetic voice does help over the course of 162. I think it can be kind of a grind, and hearing someone that's excited does help. I do hope that Francoeur improves as a just, you know, not X's and O's is the wrong word. It's just kind of, I don't know, analysis, like actual analysis, not just the very easy stuff that anybody could tell you. I hope he improves in that way. You know, it's not all advanced analytics, but there is some of that. I wish he'd get some of that at least going. You know, in his limited time this year, I wasn't terribly impressed with that. But, you know, a long way to go for him. Obviously, this is sort of I'm sure this could be a long-term thing considering his age and all that fun stuff. He's still, you know, in his mid-30s, so this is a pretty young hire for that job. Also, on the radio side, I know a lot of people like to listen to the radio broadcast. It's now going to be a four-man rotation of Jim Powell, Ben Ingram, Don Sutton, and Joe Simpson. I know Don's been doing less and less because he's pretty old at this point. I still like Don Sutton, but he's not getting any younger. So they're going with that four-man group. You know, I like Jim Powell. I like Ben Ingram. Those guys do a good job. Joe on the radio side, you know, I think people forget that Joe used to do a lot of radio back in the day when they kind of had that weird mixed booth with Skip and Pete. So he's not a stranger to radio, so we'll see how that works, and we'll see how that all breaks down. But I think this is an upgrade, frankly. You know, even if it's just Simpson for Francoeur, it's probably an upgrade for what I want in the booth. And then you add in what they're saying is more Glavin, and I think Glavin's better than both of them, frankly. So that's just my opinion. And this is all opinion-driven, by the way. I know a lot of fans, I actually was a little bit surprised to see how much fan reaction to the negative to this, that happened here, because people... There's a large swath, I think, of people that really like Joe, and they're really kind of upset about this. And I am not upset about it, but I guess, you know, having that long-lasting relationship does matter. And I think just because we didn't particularly enjoy Joe recently doesn't mean that there aren't people that did. So that's something we should say as well.
I think somebody made this point, too, and I think it's a valid one and an interesting one. And as the Braves, under Alex Anthopoulos, who clearly is running the ship now, as the Braves and really all of baseball kind of shift towards a newer game, one that's driven by analytics, one that's driven by numbers. I don't know if you necessarily want the guy who's talking half the time in all of your home and road broadcasts really just kind of doo-dooing on what so many front offices are going towards. You know,
yes,
it,
I agree.
You know, it'd be like a state-run television channel that has announcers criticizing everything that the state is doing, right? It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense from that perspective. Again, Francoeur is, I think, a little old school, though I think he would at least be open to some of the newer ways. I know, and you just listened to Brian McCann's press conference on Monday, and he was talking about how analytics have really turned his career around and how he wants as much information as he can get. And obviously him and Jeff are as close of friends as you can be for, you know, 15, 20 years now. It will be interesting to see if Jeff is open-minded to stuff like that. Not that you have to be open-minded to the new way of baseball. If you want to still look at the old school stats, be my guest. That's your prerogative. But I am, like you said, I think there's some room for him to really grow, and not that he needs to, you know, bring a calculator out with him whenever he's calling games. But I do think there's a chance for Francoeur to really kind of embrace what so many players are starting to embrace.
Yeah, there's a mix there, and I hope he gets to it. I think there are people that want the like full analytic broadcast. I'm not one of those people. I am definitely a numbers guy. I do sort of use the, I think if people listen to the podcast know that at this point, that you and I and Eric, and we like to look at the numbers, but it doesn't all have to be that. In fact, it wouldn't be a great broadcast if it's all that for me. So, you know, yeah. Francoeur could sort of do the mix of both, which I think would be preferable to what it is now. I have to say one thing that I have a hard time believing, and the Fox did say as part of the story with the AJC, they were quoted as saying that the comments about Soto and the Dodgers were not related to this. I don't believe that. I'll just say that out loud. I'm not telling you that was the entire reason, because I'm sure it wasn't. But to say that meant nothing, it's kind of the timing is very curious, considering Joe's been around for a long, long time. Nothing else really changed, and then this is the winter, just months after that happened, that they elect to make this change. I'm a little bit skeptical that it didn't matter at all. Again, I'm not saying that it was the only reason, because I'm sure it wasn't, but the fact that they said that it didn't matter at all, I don't really believe that. That's just me.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. I do. And I think, too, Fox Sports, they're not dumb, right? And they realize that after a couple of years of the Braves being bad, the TV numbers were way up this past season. And it's almost like
if people want to watch good baseball, Scott. When the team wins, people want to watch more. It's weird. I know.
Exactly. And I think they realize that if they're going to have more eyes on their broadcast, they need to have the best product possible. And I do think they deserve a level of kudos for getting rid of or at least getting rid of Joe on air for a TV perspective.
By the way, he's not gone all the way. He's still doing like 20, 30, 40 games, something like that. They haven't set a firm number, but he's not gone, which is something we should point out as well.
Yeah.
He's doing a limited schedule. That's the way that was announced. And by the way, it seemed like Joe was surprised in the AJC story. I apparently thought it was going to be scaled back, and scaled back apparently meant like almost banished. So he didn't seem particularly pleased, which is something as well.
Hmm. Yeah.
Just for some clarity there. We can leave this. I just wanted to leave with, I mean, it's the biggest story by far. I think, you know, I was talking about before we started recording, there's baseball stuff to talk about, but in terms of reaction, since Monday, since the deals happened with Donaldson and McCann, this is absolutely the biggest story around the Braves, so we had to at least talk about it. I kind of don't always want to talk about the broadcast. You know, for instance, we've not talked about the play-by-play guy, who we are not huge fans of, I know. But, you know, these people are humans, and it's tough to talk about stuff all the time, which is why I don't usually pick spots to talk about the broadcast. We get a lot of questions about the broadcast sometimes, and I kind of just ignore them because it's not the best thing to talk about for us, but this is big enough news where we just kind of had to do it. So
there you go. Absolutely.
It's coming. It's coming, and we'll see how Francoeur does. I am looking forward to the Francoeur McCann stories, if nothing else, because those are going to be coming. And we're already kind of hearing that, but those guys are both from Gwinnett County, where I grew up. So another little check mark for my personal interest, I will say. But here we are.
Yeah, so I think if anything, it's a fresh voice and a fresh outlook on the games. And I get why, again, Joe Simpson has his certain viewpoint of the way baseball should be played, and I get it. I mean, he's been around the game for probably 30 or 40 years now. I do think, though, you know, fresh voice and some energy, and I think you can. It's a grind. I mean, it's 150 games or so that you do every year for however many years that he's been in the booth, and it's a real grind. And I think to the average person at home, someone thinks, oh, going to the stadium and traveling with the team for 6 or 7 months out of the year would be a dream job. And it is. It's a really cool job if you can get it. But I do think after a certain while, you probably start to dread those 4 a.m. flights, the red-eye flights across the country after a long road trip. And it is easy to see why you might get a little cynical, a little jaded, if you will.
For sure. It's definitely a grind. And we'll leave that there for now. Move on to baseball. And there was a couple of things to talk about this week. The biggest one in terms of actual transaction was the non-tender deadline passed, and the Braves elected to tender everyone, which was a mild surprise, I will say. You know, individually, nothing was terribly shocking, but the fact that they just kind of went down the list and said, all right, everybody gets a contract offer or a tender, is interesting to me. The one guy who avoided the actual tender was Johnny Venters. The Braves signed him to a $2.25 million deal to avoid arbitration. And we made the joke on the podcast before that it's kind of crazy that Johnny's still in arbitration. Like, that's insane to me, given his age. But when you miss all that time, I guess that's just kind of what happens. But good for Venters and not having to go through arbitration, because it's just kind of crazy that he has to even face that, given the way that the baseball stuff lays out. But, I mean, the guys who got tender that were surprises, we can start with, for me, the bigger, I'm not sure they were surprises, but still, the guys who were really in doubt were Adam Duvall and Sam Freeman. What'd you make of Adam Duvall? I went on record before this happened and said that I actually would tender him, and that was a little bit unpopular. I know a lot of people really soured on him, and with good reason. He was really bad when he got to Atlanta. But if you look big picture, his production from when he got to Atlanta was definitely worthy of like the $3 million projected salary that he's going to be having. But it's an interesting calculus because he's not going to be starting, I can't imagine. So it's like you're paying for a fourth outfielder, $3 million, which is just fine. But it's like, what is Adam Duvall? So this is kind of I guess, a vote of confidence from the front office to say we think he's still the guy that he used to be when we traded for him. But what did you make of that?
I thought it was interesting. I think before everything happened, I thought that Duvall was the one guy who wouldn't get tendered. But again, at the same time, just because you tender a guy a contract doesn't mean that you're on the hook for it. You can let him go. I think
they're non-guaranteed at this point, which is important to me. I think people are talking about that like it wasn't true, but that's a very important detail. Like, they're not definitely paying him $3+ million right now. That's not a guarantee at all.
I think if they release him tomorrow, it's a sixth of what he was projected to make. So, you know, with that $500,000. So if they would decide, if they make a trade tomorrow and they need to have Duvall's roster spot and they cut him, then, you know, they're on the hook for $500K, which is obviously not a lot of money. So I'm with you. I mean, I think the overall point, my biggest takeaway was the Braves must feel like they're in a pretty good situation financially if they were going to tender all this money to all these guys. If you assume they hang on to Vizcaino and to Duvall and Sam Freeman and the rest of the relievers, you know, if you decide to non-tender Viz and Duvall, you're saving probably close to $8 million next year, maybe nine. That's a significant amount of money, especially when you have at least two holes on your roster. When you talk about a late end reliever and an outfielder, and potentially they talk about wanting a front end starter, those generally don't come cheap. So a little bit of a surprise. But if they do want to keep Duvall around, you mentioned he was pretty solid, especially in a fourth outfielder capacity before the trade. Obviously, he was really, really bad in August and September, wasn't even on the playoff roster. But for players to hit $3 million in value over a season is not hard to do. I mean, you just have to be fairly serviceable in a backup role, and you'll have no problem getting to a value of that much. So if they do decide to keep him around, I think it's a matter, again, just going back to the Braves wanting to have more depth. If you take a chance on Duvall at $3 million or so, he would have to be really, really bad for you to just outright release him. And if you do have to release him, you're not on the hook for a crazy amount of money. I'm going to guess they figured that was cheaper than what they could go and get another fourth outfielder for. So again, not a huge shock. I was surprised, but I think you could really defend it either way.
Yeah. And I think it comes down, if we just assume Duvall is going to make $3 million, which I think is not definitely going to happen. But if we assume it does, he basically just has to be the guy that he was in Cincinnati. He could actually even be a little bit worse than that, and it's fine. Like, even this year, he was not playing as well as he was previously. You know, 2016, 2017, he was really good for the Reds. He had like an OPS around 790, 800, something like that, with quality defense. That's a guy who is worth a lot more than $3 million, even as a part-time player. Last year in Cincinnati, he definitely slowed down a little bit. He had a 685 OPS, which is pretty bad, but does have power, and for me, importantly, is a pretty good corner outfield defense guy. And because of the fact that the Braves have a center fielder in Ronald Acuna who's not playing center field every day, at least right now, that kind of gives you more flexibility to have your fourth outfielder maybe be Duvall, because Duvall is good in the corner, and if something happened to Ender, you just move Ronald Acuna to center field. So that's some interesting just context there of what you're looking for with Duvall. It would not surprise me at all if he got moved away, whether it be cut or traded. I think you could probably easily trade him, to be honest with you, to a team that might be looking for someone of his pure skill set, like a right-handed power bat that can play good defense in the corner. That's, you know, it's a fairly valuable piece at times. And because his contract is reasonable and sort of locked in, it's going to be somewhere in the low $3 million range. That could be appetizing for a team. So maybe they try to trade him. Maybe they just keep him, bring him back. But I was on board with going ahead and tendering him. So no issue for me with Duvall. And if they keep him and he's awful for like 6 weeks, they'll just cut him. Like, it's not a situation where they have this like long-term commitment for Duvall. The other guy who got some blowback on Twitter was Sam Freeman. I was not surprised because Freeman's even cheaper. He's like half the price of Duvall. I don't think he's very good, but he's someone who's like, he's a major league pitcher and he's left-handed, and it's like no money at all. It's kind of where I was with it.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised to see him get a tender. I mean, he's shown, look, he's not great. He's never going to be great. But at the same time, relievers in free agency and elsewhere get paid far more than what they're worth. So, you know, for $1.5 million, $2 million, whatever he's going to get in arbitration if it gets there, if they work out a deal before then, not ideal to use, but you look at his numbers last year, he had a 3.66 FIP. The year before, of course, he had a 3.34 FIP. So if you figure you're going to get that from a lefty reliever, if you're counting on Sam Freeman to be your eighth inning guy, you're in a lot of trouble. If he's going to be the seventh or eighth guy out of your bullpen, you can do worse, frankly. So again, even if Freeman breaks camp with the team and is just abysmal in April, you either phantom DL him or you could probably just release him outright. And then you're out $1 million. So
yeah, they'll see what he looks like in spring. And honestly, for as much as we've gotten on him, and I think when he's really bad, it's really bad. And like there have been some high profile blowups from Freeman. I think he's been a little bit better than the consensus thinks he's been. If that makes sense.
I agree.
I don't think he's good at all. Which we both just said that he'd be someone who you want to be your last reliever in your bullpen. But you know, since he got to Atlanta, he has numbers that are better than you would think they are. And Steamer projects him for a 3.91 FIP, 3.61 ERA. That's not good, but it's not going to kill you. The walks are what is frustrating for Freeman. Like, if he could throw strikes, he actually would be good. He just can't throw strikes, and that's the biggest problem for me. Like, he has a career walk rate of 5/9. That's bad for someone with his kind of stuff. But if you can see past that, it's okay. And again, just like Duvall, and probably even more so than Duvall, giving him a tender does not mean he's going to be on the team opening day. It doesn't mean that at all. So we'll see how that looks. The other guy who apparently was in doubt, and I don't really know why, it had to be injury related, was Aroides Vizcaíno. Granted, he's on track to make more money than the other guys we're talking about here. But I know Mark Bowman, good friend of the program, guy that we trust, was talking about how that was like a real decision the Braves were making. I have to think that had to be injury related, because performance wise, Vizcaíno is worth a lot more than what he's projected to earn in arbitration.
Yeah, I was surprised. And I think that one was purely a health related thing. And obviously you and I and nobody else other than the Braves doctors have access to Viz's medical records. He had two shoulder injuries last year. Again, $5 million, not an insignificant amount of money, but going back to what you were just talking about with how much relievers get paid in free agency, it's probably a worthwhile gamble. I mean, with what he's been able to do, if he can throw you 40 or 50 innings next year, he's probably worth that $5 million. That's a little easier said than done, again, especially when you do have a shoulder injury like he does. But at the same time, for $5 million, it's not going to break the bank one way or the other. And again, it kind of goes back to the point of, I think the Braves feel pretty decently that they're going to be able to address all of their needs and still have money for the trade deadline in July. If they were really worried about, well, we'd like to get these things done, but I'm not sure the money's going to work out, then you don't tender Viz or you don't tender Duvall. Right now, I think payroll is around $105 million, which leaves them more than enough room to make some moves. And if they feel like Viz is a worthwhile $5 million or so, dollar gamble, then so be it. I don't think you'll get too much fight one way or the other.
If he's healthy, I mean, he's worth more than that. I mean, I know Vizcaíno is not being the most consistent guy in the world, and you can't really count on him for like 80 innings in the bullpen. But if you think he's going to be healthy at the outset of the season, he's going to get more than that on free agent market. So I'm okay with that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a chance that bites him, but the risk factor is not super high given what he's making. And Vizcaíno, you know, honestly, probably has the highest upside of anyone in the bullpen. I mean, maybe Minter, I think, probably has higher upside. But other than that, when he's good, he's really good. And that's someone the Braves need. I do think that at some point they're going to keep looking and try to add a high-end closer type. But if they don't, the guys in the eighth and ninth inning are going to be Vizcaíno and Minter. So
yeah.
You need somebody else like that. I don't think they have another guy like Vizcaíno around right now. So just keep him around, and the risk is not that high. So I was kind of flummoxed by that. I do think that Bowman must have heard something on that, which I don't blame him at all. I think it's because of the durability and the injury stuff, and that makes sense. But I also would have been a little bit frustrated if they parted ways with him, because there's just a lot of risk in that. Honestly, there's more risk in letting him go than there is in tendering him. That's where I am with that.
Yeah, I agree. For $5 million, if we're talking in a year about how the Braves royally screwed up by tendering Viz at $5 million, then we probably had a really good season because of how minimal that is.
So, I was going to say, I mean, I can't imagine us, even if he gets hurt or blows up, I don't think you and I are going to come on this podcast in June and be like, man, why did they tender Aroides Vizcaíno? You know what I mean? That's not going to happen. Like, we'll just say, oh, he's hurt, or oh, he's been bad. There's nothing in his track record to say that he's not worth $5 million or whatever he's going to make. It's a silly thing. Like, you'd have to be pretty confident that he was not going to be available And I can't see that really being the case with what we know. Obviously, they know more than we do. The last thing on the tender stuff was that I know we mentioned that all the guys that were available to be tender were all tender. The three guys who were no-brainers were Mike Fulton-Davich, Kevin Gausman, and Charlie Culberson. Those were in no doubt whatsoever. We did get one question about Culberson that I wanted to answer because we spent a lot of time Monday talking about Johan Camargo, and with good reason. He's a better player than Culberson and is younger, et cetera, et cetera. But we got a question from Cody, and he says, I like the conversation about Camargo and his utility on last week's show, but what about Charlie Culberson? He was good this year, but it seems like he might be in a smaller role now. I think, yes, he'll be in a smaller role now. Culberson, just to sort of set the backdrop here, Culberson will be 30 years old in April. 2018 was by far the best year of his career, like not even close. He had a 108 WRC plus last season, which was, you know, leaps and bounds better than anyone could have projected reasonably. He's never hit that. Even in the minors, he wasn't hitting that. And now his career mark is 73 WRC plus over 765 plate appearances. So Culberson's bat did feel like it was at a high point in 2017. In 2018. That's kind of where I'll leave that. But with Camargo sort of being in that super utility role, at least right now, Culberson's knocked down a peg at a minimum. Like, I think he's a guy who you won't see start very often. He'll still have some value as a pinch hitter and someone who can still play everywhere. But with now a guy in front of you playing the same positions for the most part, he does take a step back. So, A, what do you expect from Culberson in 2019 as he sort of bounces back from his career year? And B, he's going to be around, so what's his role going to be?
Yeah, I think it's an ideal situation for Culberson, honestly. You never necessarily want to bank on a prior year's performance from players, especially in his case, as you said, where it was leaps and bounds better than any season he's had before. That's not to say that guys at age 29, 30 can't figure out something and be better players than they were at age 27, 28. And I think ideally when Culberson was basically your entire bench, they really counted on him. And when he wasn't swinging as well as he was earlier in the year, they felt that. And of course, we saw that the dangers of having such a thin bench. He had to replace Dansby in the division series. And obviously that hurt the Braves and took away a pinch hitting option. And it was a bad situation all the way around. So we've talked about Camargo being the super utility guy. Culberson's also in that utility role. More and more teams around baseball have those utility kind of guys who can play five or six positions on the diamond at any time. And you hope that he's able to repeat or at least come close to doing what he did last year. And if he doesn't, you're not at anything great. But again, it never is a bad situation when you have players who are capable of, you know, if they have to play for, a month or whatever it may be because of an injury, you're not closing your eyes and hoping the ball doesn't get hit to them or that you're hiding them in the eighth or the ninth spot in the order. So I think it only can help Culberson not being the main guy off the bench. And if he's able to come close to what he did last year, the Braves will be in really good shape. And I'm going to think ultimately he's not quite as good as what he was last season. But I don't necessarily think he's going to fall off a cliff all of a sudden. So I'll put it probably somewhere between what he was last year and obviously going back to what he was the last couple of years.
I would certainly bet that he is never as good as he was over a full season as he was in 2018, but he can still be a helpful player even if he's not. That's kind of where I am with that. It's just Culberson is someone who you preferably want to be your last bench player, in my opinion. Like someone who there is utility, he can play really almost everywhere. The bat's okay-ish, maybe. Like I think we saw a lot. If he's the same guy he was last year, then it's definitely okay. But just there's a lot of utility in having somebody like that. I don't want to go too far into the you can never have too many good players thing because that's your corner, Scott. I know you've been on ranting about that for weeks. But it's true. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having someone better than Culberson in his previous role, which is now the role Camargo's in, but even a bigger role for Camargo, I'll say, than Culberson. But having Culberson in Ryan Flaherty's role, which is where he will kind of where he was last year, and that like second backup infielder, Culberson could play a little bit of corner outfield as well if he had to. That's a massive upgrade. You know what I mean? Like it's just if he's your worst player, which he might be, if he's your worst bench player, that's a good spot to be in because he's someone who's a major league player. We've seen that he's been a productive major leaguer, and there's some safety in the fact that he can play everywhere. Again, the bat there's not that much safety in the bat. It might be real, but even if it's not, you could do worse for that final spot, and we saw the Braves do worse for that final spot last year.
Oh yeah,
with Ryan Flaherty. So yeah, he's better than that, if nothing else. So that's a nice place, and that's sort of a nice landing spot for Culberson, and that he's going to play less, barring like two injuries. I think he's going to play less than he did last year, but that's not a knock on him. It's just that they've upgraded elsewhere.
I think so, and I don't want to say last year's team was smoke and mirrors by any means. I mean, it is not easy to win 90 games. If it was easy to win 90 games, everyone would do it. But you really start to look at the Braves roster at the end of the season and how some guys had slowed down. And it was very obvious, and Alex Anthopoulos talked about it during either the McCann or Donaldson press conference. They need to, as a front office, they need to improve the lineup. And it really sounds to me like that was almost the area of focus for the front office, more so than the bullpen, more so than the rotation. That's not to say they're not going to improve the rotation or bullpen, but you could clearly see when Anthopoulos was talking that he and all of his front office mates needed to upgrade the lineup. And I think whenever you go, as you said, from having Charlie Culberson as your starting shortstop because of an injury to having him be the fourth or fifth guy off the bench, it can only help your ball club that much more. And ultimately goes back to what we were talking about of having that versatility, having that flexibility. So when things inevitably happen, you feel pretty comfortable about your team moving forward.
Agreed. And we could leave that there. You know, he'll be around and he'll be cheap, and that's nice for the Braves. One other bit of like semi news, if you can even call it that, is Nick Cofardo of the Boston Globe, who's often reported on some Brave stuff, is a good national voice, even though he's a regional guy in terms of where he works. Cofardo reports that Dallas Keuchel is, quote, high on the Braves wish list, end quote, and the team is, quote, looking for a veteran leader, end quote. Not sure what that means, other than the fact that Keuchel is pretty good. And the Braves have a starting pitching need. I think we've talked about a lot of like trade stuff with starting pitchers, but they could just sign someone. And if they do, Keuchel, Patrick Corbin are like the big names that have been out there. Keuchel is a little bit less sexy than the top guys, but Keuchel is also pretty solid. It might be, he won't be cheap by any means, but he may not break the bank either. So what'd you make of that like little buzz? It wasn't like a full blown like rumor or anything, but the fact that Braves has some interest there is at least noteworthy.
I never really know how much to put into Cofardo's rumors. I mean,
agreed.
They're fun. He, I would bet if you go over an offseason, he probably links every free agent to about 15 teams. And maybe he does have legitimate sources telling him, yeah, the Braves are interested in Keuchel. Yeah, the Braves are interested in so-and-so. It doesn't take a whole lot to me, at least, to put two and two together. The Braves have money. Keuchel's a good starter. He would fit. The Braves have some Astros people in their front office now who are familiar with his work, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I probably wouldn't be as keen on bringing him in just because of the projected salary. I know MLB trade rumors had him at 4 years and $81 million, which is obviously $20 million bucks a year for 4 years for a guy who's 30 and has quite a bit of mileage on his arm already. Just in general, I think it's probably best practice to steer away from the top tier free agents in on the pitching market, or at least on the pitching side. And again, I know I forget who it was. Maybe Jake Humphrey on Twitter pointed out that next year J.A. Happ is projected to basically be the same pitcher as Dallas Keuchel, and he'll probably get a third of the contract that Keuchel will, maybe not even. So there's other options out there if all of a sudden you're looking at it, and obviously we're not sitting in the negotiation rooms with Keuchel and his agent. Who knows what contract he's eventually going to get, but ultimately I don't think there's going to be a fit there. I'm going to guess he gets one too many years and a few too many dollars for the Braves really to want to get in there.
I agree. I think if it's a full-blown bidding war, then you probably don't want to be in it for Dallas Keuchel, but he's still fairly young. Like, he'll be 31 in January, but that's a pretty reasonable age for someone who you're probably going to be given like a 3 or 4 year deal to. Like, it's not like it's a crazy risk. He's been pretty safe. He's, you know, he had a little bit of injury stuff in 2017, but he's been pretty consistent. He had the one outlier, you know, 6-win season in 2015. Did he win a Cy Young? I think he did. If he did,
yeah, he
came
did.
Close. He did. So yeah, it's he was very good that year. Other than that, you know, the other 4 or 5 years out of the last six, he's been about a 3-3.5 win pitcher, give or take a win or so. And that's a good pitcher. His upside's not super high, but his lows are not very low. So that could be a helpful piece. I could hear Braves fans now pushing back on the thing. Like, I think there's this narrative that the Braves are going to get this number, like, no doubt number one. And Keuchel isn't that. Like, I don't think he's a no doubt number one. Like, he's capable. We've seen him be an ace before, but I would not project him as an ace moving forward. He'd be a strong 2-3 type. And the Braves could certainly use that. He would definitely help the rotation, but I don't want to pay top dollar for that kind of player right now. It'd be different if he was 27, but he's 31. It's not super old, but there's just more risk as you get older. So I think we're on the same page here. Like, he would help the Braves, no question about it. And he might be a consolation prize if their top stuff strikes out, or if they get some sort of deal on him. Like, if the market dries up for some reason, then sure. If he wants to take a nice soft landing spot in Atlanta for a reasonable deal, sure, you know, sign me up. But I can't imagine that's going to be super likely. Given his age, it's probably time to capitalize if you're Dallas Keuchel. And the Braves shouldn't be the team that, like, wins a bidding war for him.
No, I don't think so. And I don't ultimately think they will. I think, again, I'm going to say in that case, it's more of Cafardo just kind of connecting the dots than anything. It's not hard to connect. And I get it. I mean, he's a reporter. He has to – that's kind of his thing, is kind of the beat around all of baseball. He's obviously a Red Sox writer, but he does have some credibility to him and all that. So it's interesting to discuss nonetheless, and especially with the winter meetings about a week out. Last week was pretty crazy. I think this next week is going to be just as busy, if not busier. And then, of course, the winter meetings are always pretty crazy because we get that last push before everybody kind of takes 2 weeks off for the Christmas holiday. So it should be fun.
Yes, it should be. And yeah, I guess technically the winter meetings start a week from today. They don't really ramp up until the Monday, but they technically open on the Sunday, the 9th. So we're almost there. One more theoretical thing, not a ton of Braves linkage to him in terms of like formalized rumors, but Mitch Haniger's been a popular topic on Twitter this week. I know you were talking about him a lot. You tweeted some stuff about how he would look pretty good in the Braves uniform, and we all kind of agree on that. There was some pushback to that, but people just don't know how good he's been, number one. And number two, there's this interesting dynamic with Buster Olney of ESPN reporting that the Mariners now might want to attach Kyle Seager, who makes a pretty good chunk of money the next several years. He's kind of a bad contract at this point. May want to attach him to Mitch Haniger or Gene Segura, somewhere like that, in order to shed the books a little bit. The Braves might get interested there a little bit. You know, Seager is a third baseman, which is not ideal at the moment, considering the presence of Josh Donaldson. But you can get creative there, play in the corner outfield spot, et cetera, et cetera. So the big thing I want to ask you about is Haniger as a theoretical fit. There was this precious idea of Haniger and Edwin Diaz, which is now out the window because Diaz is going to be moving on to the Mets. But Haniger is a pretty awesome baseball player, so sign me up if they can get him for any reasonable price.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of our listeners are East Coast folks who, you know, the Mariners game started probably 10-10 on the East Coast. So, you know, for those who don't know Mitch Haniger, he's a late bloomer. He came up at, I think, the age of 26, I want to say. He was with the Brewers for a while. He was with the Diamondbacks and just couldn't break through. One of those guys who kind of got labeled as a 4A baseball player, if you will, somebody who's really good in the minors, but doesn't quite have the tools to stick in the majors. And ever since he came up, I mean, he just crushes. I mean, last year, 157 games, 26 homers, 93 RBI, 8 steals, hit .285, .366, .493, gets on base at a good rate, doesn't strike out a ton. I was looking it up, and I think since the start of last year, the only outfielders who have hit better than Haniger are Trout, Betts, JD Martinez, and Christian Yelich. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's pretty good company. So because of his age, he's 27, about to turn 28. He has 4 more years of control, which is rare. But again, he came up later on as a player. So he's going to make, you know, $500K next season and then have 3 years of arbitration the next 3 years after that. He's not going to come cheap, that's for sure. But he's kind of like in Christian Yelich's situation last year, a player that if you have to overpay a little bit in prospect capital, at least in my opinion, you do it because of how good he is. And you talk about putting him into the lineup and what he could do. And you talk about giving the Braves maybe the best lineup in the National League if you add Haniger in there, especially with some of the versatility you're going to have now with Camargo and others. So as you said, nobody has directly been like, yeah, the Braves are talking a Haniger deal. But he's somebody who I'm a big, big fan of and obviously fits. And not just with the Braves, but probably 20 teams in baseball would love to have him right now. So. It would cost a lot for sure, but he is somebody who, again, I would be happy to pay a lot for.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty simple, honestly. I think he's just not a huge name, so people might want to push back. But like your theoretical possible like potential trade offer of, it would take three big time prospects, I think, to get Haniger, on his own. Obviously, the price comes down if you take back Seager or some other bad money that the Mariners might have. But just like a 3-for-1, I think it would take some pretty impressive prospect capital. And by the way, I'd pay that. I agree with you. People might have missed that tweet, but essentially, just pick three of the top, 8, 10 Braves prospects, and that's what it's going to take. That's kind of where I am with that. I mean, it's not, you can't, it's, there's this popular notion among Braves fans, some Braves fans that want to like package together like four guys who are in like the 14 to 25 range, and that doesn't, it's not going to get you a top flight guy. Like, you can't headline prospect package with Colby Allard. It just doesn't work out that way.
No, so absolutely not.
You're going to have to part ways with Pache or Wright or Anderson or Tukey, or those guys are going to have to be in a deal to get the best guys available, which Haniger is one of those guys. Like, you could certainly put a package together of lesser prospects and get a starting caliber outfielder, but Mitch Haniger, as you laid out there, is like an all-star caliber outfielder, and that is a different sort of tier that you're working from. So Haniger makes sense. We'll sort of be monitoring to see if we get some actual rumors there. I think the Braves do make a ton of sense for him, just as a theoretical partner for the Mariners too. Like, if they're going to trade him,
yeah,
I can't think of a situation that would be more advantageous for Seattle than Atlanta. But it's not always that easy, which we always point out. Like, maybe they don't love the Braves prospects, but if they do like the Braves prospects, it does seem like a fit on both sides. So that's why it keeps coming up from people that are smart, because it just makes too much sense.
It does. And if we'll see. And if I think the other thing too, people were discussing Seager's contract a little bit, and there, he certainly owed some money over the next 4 years with his deal. Though, as we've seen, if there's any two GMs in baseball who can make a deal work with some weird money, it's these two. I mean, you think about Anthopoulos last year working out the Matt Kemp deal in the five-player swap. He was able to trade away Vernon Wells' terrible contract when he was a young GM with the Blue Jays. He's not a GM who is afraid of big contracts or is unable to get creative with moving money around. As we saw even this past week, giving $23 million to Josh Donaldson. So it's going to be intriguing. I almost feel like we're just kind of waiting for that rumor from somebody, I don't want to say more legit than Cafardo, because I want to act like he's just a clown who knows nothing. But I feel like it's almost inevitable until we really start to see it. And if you're Seattle, as you mentioned, Brad, it's kind of a no-brainer to give the Braves a call, or at least really look them over because of all the different kinds of prospects they have and the different ages of prospects with some value that they'd be interested in. They have the guys who are major league ready, like a Tukey, like a Soroka, even a Kyle Wright. They have some guys who are a little bit younger, maybe, 2 or 3 years away, maybe a year or two away in other cases. So I would think those two teams match up well, and they have two GMs who are creative enough to make a deal happen if there is mutual interest.
Yep, I totally agree. Okay, last thing. And then one more mailbag question that I wanted to take comes from Deke Barron, and he asks, what do you anticipate the market for Julio Teheran might be? I will say we've discussed this and not really gone too deep into it, because I think we both expect, or at least think it's a possibility, a pretty good possibility, that Julio won't be around. But he's owed some real money, and I think the Braves might need that money. So just to lay it out a little bit, $11 million that he is owed for 2019. And the Braves, or whichever team he has, whichever team employs him in 2020, will have a club option for $12 million with a $1 million buyout. So in starting pitcher terms, that's not a huge contract by any means, even for someone who hasn't been great lately. That's a deal that guys might get on the free agent market. It's sort of like a pillow contract, like a one-year prove-it deal, which is basically what this is. So with that in mind, I think the Braves can move him, but I mean, what is the market for him? I don't know. I mean, you're not going to get anything back. That's kind of where I am. Like, I just don't see the Braves getting anything back, but like maybe like a C-level prospect. Am I wrong on that? Do you see a scenario where the Braves trade just Julio and get something of any value in return? Because I just don't see that.
I don't either. I think, if I had to bet on it, I almost think Julio would be an intriguing piece. If the Braves are going to trade for in a deal where a player is owed some money, might not have a great contract, he kind of makes sense to help balance out the money a little bit if you trade him back somewhere.
An NBA style trade where you got to match right. Your salary a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Or even what the Mets did this past week, where they sent Bruce and Swarzak to the Mariners to eat, what was it? $18 million or whatever those two are owed this year. So, as far as value, you're not openly looking to get a prospect for Julio Teheran. I just don't think that's really how Anthopoulos would go about trying to trade him. I think he's more of a package piece, if you will. Look, I mean, to his credit, he's durable. He's not necessarily the best pitcher in the world at this point. I think even a rose-colored outlook on him would be more of that of a decent fourth starter or a serviceable fifth starter, which he was last season. Not great by any means, though. As you said, it's not like you just can't pitch him. It's not like he, you know, can't get you a couple innings. He threw what, 170 innings last year, 180 innings, which isn't bad. Those kind of pitchers don't grow on trees. So ultimately, I do think Julio gets moved. I just don't see a fit for him on next year's team, especially with the front office really saying that the Braves are absolutely going to try to win in 2019 and are going for it. If you're really doing that, I just don't see a scenario where he's one of your five best starting pitching options. So ultimately, I think he gets moved. Maybe they do flip him and you know, throw in a couple $1 million cash and get a C-level relief prospect for him. But he's a hard guy to gauge. As you said, it's not a terrible contract, but it's not as if it's a scenario where you're going to have multiple teams lining up for him.
Right. And that's when I, you know, we're asked about the market. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Like, there is no real market. I do think, though, that a lot of teams could use him, including the Braves. It's more of a situation where how much financial tolerance do the Braves have? Because if you just went in a vacuum, if the Braves don't acquire a number one, two, three-ish starting pitcher, they'd probably be better off as an organization having Julio around as depth, because he's durable. And, you know, for me, it's a pretty good percentage chance that he is better in 2019 only than some of these prospect guys that the Braves might be using in the rotation. Like, it's not impossible that young guys could be better than him, but in terms of safety, you know, is he gonna, like, if you had to pitch him or Colby Allard, like, he's better than Colby Allard. Even Tukey, like, I know Tukey looked good, but I'm not 100% sure I would project Tukey to be, like, fully better than Julio Teheran in 2019 only. Obviously, for the future, it's not close. But, you know what I mean? Like, I think Julio is someone we've all been frustrated with. At the same time, I think he would be a very credible 4-5 starter for basically anyone. So there's value in that. It's just kind of how much do the Braves want to keep him around for depth versus shedding him just to shed his salary and use it elsewhere. In a salary cap league, or if the Braves had to really worry about the salary cap, he'd be a pretty easy guy to move off of. But if they don't, you know, have to, quote-unquote, use that money, keeping him wouldn't be the worst thing. Like, I think he won't be around. If you're asking me what I'm thinking will happen, I think he'll be traded. But it wouldn't just blow me away to all the world if he was back on the team to start 2019.
Yeah, I get that. I get what you're saying, too, about the better than some of the young guys. We just don't know. I think if we don't. Yeah, and that's what you're dealing with when you're talking about pitching prospects who are 21, 22, 23 years old. I think almost from a fan perspective, you do hope he gets traded just because you would like to see what a Max Fried could do with
Clear
their start.
Yeah, I agree.
Or Mike Soroka or whoever it is, because there is going to be a bit of a log jam, even if they do trade a couple of those guys away. Not that you can ever have too many pitching prospects, but there will be a little bit. So I think we're in agreement. Ultimately, he won't be with the Braves this time in 3 or 4 months. But as you said, you can do worse as a guy if he is going to be the fifth starter, at least for a little while, and see if he's able to reclaim a little bit of what he was prior to last year. It's not like you're automatically forfeiting games that he starts.
No, not at all. And again, like, I think there are only a very few precious situations around the league where he wouldn't be one of the best 5 or 6 stars on a roster. Like, there are very few teams that have more than 5 guys better than Julio Teheran. Like, yeah. Are there 2? Are there 3? Maybe, I mean, Houston and I don't know who else. Like, there
maybe the Dodgers.
The Dodgers. I mean, aside from, like, the uber elite, Julio Teheran would be the fifth starter in most rotations. Mm-hmm. And the Braves want to be that, but they're not that now. You know what I mean? Like, 2 years from now, maybe the Braves are just, like, in that class with the Dodgers or the Astros or the Cubs or whoever. But right now, he might just be your fifth starter. Like, it's not the worst thing in the world. And I do think it's a good point that they bring up, that fans aren't going to be excited and aren't going to want to see him pitch at the expense of someone younger who has higher upside. But if it's, like, for instance, Max Fried's a perfect comp. I think I'd much rather see Max Fried be a starter from opening day forward than Julio Teheran. I am a lot more intrigued by that. But there's a 50-50 chance, maybe even higher, that Julio is better in 2019 than Max Free would be. So it's like, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think the safety just can't be ignored. I think fans like to see upside, and with good reason, but safety is a valuable thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. Never have too many pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, going back to your operating thing right now is you can't have too many good players. It's sort of the same thing for pitchers. Julio's not good anymore, but he also is useful. So,
yeah.
And but man, if he just stopped walking people last year, I don't want to go too. I'm staring at his Fangraphs page as we talk. Suddenly, he just started walking people, and he never walked people ever. Like, that's the thing. If you're worried about Julio Teheran, that's what you have to worry about. Is if he's suddenly walking 4+ guys per nine, he's no longer a pitcher that you want anymore.
Yeah. So that, he had one of the most bizarre seasons. Like, if you just look across the board,
up and down and high and low,
and the velocity dip and the like lowest hard hit percentage against in baseball, other than like Max Scherzer.
Well, he famously had like the lowest. Did he finish with the season with the lowest batting average allowed in baseball?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, not hard hit, but yeah, batting average against. It was, if not the lowest, like second lowest, which is just
he had a 217 BABIP allowed, which is like hilariously low.
Yeah,
and a lot of that's because he was giving up home runs. Like all the gains that you think he would make from having that kind of batting average against were all given back because he walked 4.3 guys per nine and allowed 1.3 home runs per nine. Like, so it was like it's the weirdest thing in the world. Like, he still ended up with a sub 4 ERA, which I think that's a good parlor trick right now. Ask people if Julio Teheran had a sub 4 ERA last year, and people would definitely say no.
But he did. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Weird year for him.
Weird season, and we'll see where he is in 2019. I mean, real quickly, I know I said it. Do you think he's traded? I think he's traded, but
I do. Make sure. Okay. Ultimately, yeah. I think he's – if the Braves are going to take on – I think Anthopoulos is going to be open to the idea of taking on a not great contract in order to lessen the prospect blow, because I do think he legitimately – I want to say he kind of learned his lesson, frankly, in Toronto. He kind of depleted the farm system, and the Blue Jays paid for it. Even if it was in the years after he left, it's not hard to look and see what happened. I think ultimately he'll use Julio as a way to help balance out some money if he does take on a contract that's not great. I think as of today, that's where I'd lean with it. But who knows? I mean, again, maybe a team, I don't know, a team like the Los Angeles Angels, who could probably use some durability in their rotation. They're a team that always has injuries. You know, the Angels want to take on Julio and for $8 million. The Braves throw $3 million and the Angels give a fringe prospect to him. Maybe something like that happens. But I do think ultimately he'll help balance some money in a deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. And for all of the hand-wringing that I'm sure will occur if the Braves just make a cost-saving move like that in favor of Liberty Media's pockets, if they spend that money, then I don't really care. You know what I mean? Like, if they're going to turn that around and use it somewhere else, then it's definitely okay.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Scott. Well, in true Talking Chop podcast fashion, we had nothing to talk about, and here we are 51 minutes later, full-length podcast on, like, three topics, none of which were urgent. So, perfect for a Sunday in early December. But please plug anything you got going on. I know it's sort of slow right now for most people because we're just kind of waiting on the next shoe to drop, but please tell people where they can find your work. As always, I know you're frequently on the pod, but I am reminded every once in a while that we do acquire new listeners, people that kind of want to get to know us a little bit more. So, here we are.
Yeah, check out the site. I mean, last week was a lot of fun with everything going on, and hopefully you mentioned the emergency podcast that we did on Monday night. Hopefully we do another one here in the near future, which honestly wouldn't surprise me it just seems like across baseball, I don't know if you feel the same way. It feels like we're just going to have a couple weeks of craziness here, and this was the first week.
I think it's going to start like Sunday or Monday, like right when the winter meetings start. It might just be all hell breaking loose. And the Braves may not be involved because honestly, the Braves made the headlines all by themselves on Monday. It was basically like Braves Day Monday/Tuesday, where they were the only team doing something, and that happens every once in a while. But like, you get to winter meetings and like there'll be 5, 6, 7 teams making moves at the same time, and it may not be the Braves, but it may be the Braves because I think the entire baseball world has their eye on the Braves. For a number of reasons. A, they have money. B, they have prospects. C, they have a pretty aggressive general manager. And, you know, there's all the reason to suspect they're going to do something. I'm just not sure when it's going to be.
Well, and the big spenders, other than the Yankees, really haven't done anything. I mean, if you think about it, Dodgers, yeah, they re-signed Kershaw and Ryu, but that's about it. The Red Sox haven't really done anything except for re-sign Steve Pierce to a one-year deal, which I'm not sure even with his October heroics really moves the needle. The Cubs haven't really done much. The Cardinals haven't done anything. The Astros haven't really done anything. The Angels, who seem to spend a ton of money every winter, haven't done anything. So it's the Phillies and Nationals, who both have money to spend, haven't done much. So I really do think it's going to be a fun offseason, which, frankly, fans deserve after how terrible last year's was. So, but yeah, as always, check out the talkingchop.com and Twitter and all of our social media pages. It's a lot of fun, and hopefully we have plenty to write about over the next couple of days.
Follow Scott at ScottColin55, the greatest Twitter account in the land. Except for on Sundays when we talk.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Sunday afternoon should be like an unfollow for you and I think, during football season at this point, because it's just, oh man.
Yeah.
I've decided today, to bring it all full circle from the beginning of this podcast, I decided today that 1 p.m. will be a appointment time. I'll do some errands at 1 p.m. Eastern on Sundays for the rest of the season. I'll Christmas shopping, you know, homework stuff that I need to do for the podcast. That kind of stuff will be happening during football games, and the Falcons are dead to me until 2019.
Yeah. So. What happened? Well, that's a whole other can of
worms. Let's not do that. But hey, go Colts. The Colts are going to be, like, in the mix, at least. The Falcons are all 100% dead. It's a bad loss for the Colts today, but go Colts. Yeah. I'm on your side, Scott.
Go fun. Colts. I appreciate that.
All right. As for Scott, please follow me if you want to. I don't know why you would, but at BT Rowland, follow the podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, all those fun places. And please follow Talking Chop, both at talkingchop.com and also at Talking Chop on Twitter. We will see you guys in another week. Unless something crazy happens, we have to do an emergency podcast at like 2 in the morning on a Wednesday, which has happened before. But
might happen.
Stay tuned. Yeah. And if that happens, it'll probably be probably will be Scott and I, because Scott's on the West Coast and he's up later than everybody else is. So
yeah.
There you go. All right, everybody. I enjoyed this one. Hopefully you guys did too. We'll see you guys next week.